Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your host, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles 102.3 FM Riverside
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dollar Store Dave.
Continuing for me.
Yeah, this is a much, much nicer flavor than the Rose.
Yeah. Yeah, that is better than Rose.
Yeah, certainly.
Dollar Store Dave.
Certainly.
Too bad they only have like DVDs and Blu-rays every like few months. So.
Yeah, well, you've got to do something with your life, so.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, you always
keep myself out of trouble.
Did you see, I was reading just before we came on about that Australian woman where they found that worm in her brain. Hey,
I did not hear about that. No.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy. And I hear that she got it from something she ate.
Oh.
Yeah. So you got
to the dollar store.
Yeah, she
yes.
Dollar store. Well, today we've got a couple of writers with us. We're going to be talking about their newest book and about the writing process. The newest book is called The Killer Enigma, Magnolia Bluff, Crime Chronicles, Book 16. So let's welcome to the show the authors of that. First, we've got Charles Brakefield. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it.
And Rox Berkey. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for letting us be here. We appreciate it.
Well, guys, you know, I always say when we get people that are writing together, first off, or how it came across where you've decided, well, this person's cool, I want to write with them. Like, where does that all start? And I'll start with Rox.
Well, to be honest with you, it actually starts from professional careers. We ended up in the same company. And we got tagged specifically to start writing technical contributions into manuals for the products that we were selling. And so we found that we could work really well together in doing that and optimize both of our strengths in the final product. And, you know, our leaders liked that a lot. So we ended up doing a lot of workshops for customers together that really helped, I guess, solidify each of our voices. That's how it started.
Yeah. And Charles, what's your story?
Well, I was hitchhiking one day and she picked me up.
Okay. Well, we all start somewhere.
Yeah. And she said, we need somebody to fill this role at my company. How good are you at network connectivity? And I went, pretty good, actually. So we got to doing that, and then that took us to the next destination. And she actually knocked on the door one day and said, hey, look at this. I got the swell gig. They want us to write some tech manuals. And so we played at that for two books worth. And I don't know how well you know the tech industry. As soon as you print something, it's out of date. technology evolves so that in such a way that every 18 months, whatever you worked on is obsolete or, you know, being sundowned or being displaced with something else. So I was a little bit miffed. That's probably the polite word to put it. And I stomped off, and she said, came back at me in 3 months and said, I've got this idea. By the way, those are the four most terrifying words in her language, in her vocabulary. I have an idea. Anyway, she says, take a look at this. We'll do fiction, but we'll keep the technology, the technical facts in background mode. How about that? And then that kind of led us to down the road for the Enigma series. And then that got us into the some other genres, including the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles. And that's, you know, it's sort of an evolution. And it's never a lightning bolt one moment and, ha-ha, let's go do this. It's, you know, small steps and a fun journey. I enjoy working with her.
Well, Charles, I was going to say, but technical books that you're writing compared to what you do now, it's quite different. I mean, there's a structure to it, and then there's a discipline, of course, of getting a book written or a novel or anything like that. But there's a different feel to that. Like, how did you know you had the feel for doing something like, you know, a fictional book of any type?
It's like the journey of 1,000 miles. It begins with the first step. You go out and try it. We take a look at you scan the horizon. You look at the people that that are doing it and quite successful at it. You get some ideas. You go to writer conferences. You know, you got hang out with other people that that write in that particular genre and just sit there and chat. And then so that kind of gives you the background framework of the topic that you want to be able to capture. And so, but it's still storytelling, whether it's technical, you know, a lot of heavy tech facts, or if it's a lot of who did it kind of things, or some of the short stories that, you know, it takes practice. And that's what we like to do, is to practice in these genres. And it's a bit of an exercise. I wouldn't say we're perfect at it, but I would say that the reviews we're beginning clearly indicate that we're doing something right.
So Rox, now obviously you're the boss.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So how does it come to you? Is it the story first? Is it the character? Is it the setting? So when you initiate a story or an idea, how does it begin?
I think for us, it begins usually with some level of a technical threat, even in our cozy mysteries for like the Killer Enigma. There is some kind of a technical thread that goes through it, because that's where we have our most, our best experience, I guess it would be. So, you know, we take an idea of what we want the threat to go to and who it might hurt and how that might happen. And then weave around the story of, okay, can we get there this way or that way? And then the characters that will help make that story form the best. So we kind of have a, you know, kind of a mixed way that we work on stories. So we have discussions about the problem, and then we have discussions about what kind of story, as far as whether it's going to be a thriller or whether it's going to be a mystery. And then when we talk about the characters, so we weave, oh, I don't know, in the one we're working on for right now, it's specifically, how many threads are the story going to have? How long is, you know, how are they going to lead to one another? And what will it solve or not solve? And if it doesn't solve something well, then we throw it away and start over again. But everything is tracked. I know it's going to sound really strange, but we track it all in a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Just so that, you know, it's easy to follow.
When you develop a character, so you've kind of got an idea of some technical idea of a threat, as you said, and then you start to develop characters to, let's say, deal with this threat in whatever way. So it's a general thought. So when you're developing these characters, have you ever had a character that you've liked and maybe Charles didn't like, or maybe he liked and you didn't like? Like, how do you guys work out which characters are going to go forward?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The characters that go forward are the ones that have some redeeming quality to them, even if they're bad guys. Are they worth having again because they were so deliciously bad that everybody likes them? Are they worth bringing forward because they're nice people? They seem to do a nice thing. So in the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles for us, the two main characters are.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are good guy kind of characters, And they do have different attributes that they bring forward. So have we ever had one that really didn't like? Yes, we actually have. And I think we played rock, paper, scissors 3 times to get rid of that character. Is that right, Charles? Is that how we did that one?
Yeah, you might as well know that whenever we have an agreement to disagree, it always comes down to the challenge of the rock, paper, scissors, and whoever wins the most times, their will is what we go with. In full disclosure, I have never won rock, paper, scissors against Roxanne.
It's rigged.
I don't know how she's doing it, but there it is. I want to go on record as having groused about never being able to invest her at rock, paper, scissors.
We do have some kind of lively discussions for things that we do or do not want in a story. And I think overall it equals out. There are points that may come up because we trade chapters back and forth, but we also have, you have things that happen when you're a writer sometimes. Either the characters talk to you, which happens to us, or you dream about something. I know that Charles has created chapters in the middle of where our thought has been. It's a really good chapter. But it keeps moving down toward the end of the book because we haven't gotten there yet. So, we're pretty flexible, actually.
Well, you say you can hear your characters. And I was just wondering, since you both are writing, and you're both passing these chapters back and forth, how do you kind of sync up the character voices for each with both of you doing these same characters?
Well, it we're leveraging our patent pending technique of literary ping pong. it's batting the chapters back and forth until they get a nice shine to them, highly polished, so that you can't tell who wrote it. Even our editor will march in and say, "Who wrote this?" And I go, "Yeah." There's that. That's just a professional thing that we do for our books, so that it's not a distraction for the reader. The reader has got to be able to say, "It sounded like one voice writing it," and that's the overall challenge. That means that the story threads have got to be polished to sound like one. The characters, we have to have agreement that this is the way the character will go for these particular reasons. We have other attack vectors or other junctures that we want to take them through. So here's all the stuff that we need to make sure we're in agreement and that the story flows. It doesn't have any abruptness to it other than, I wasn't expecting that. Those are most gratifying from the reviewers.
I think the other thing to your point, David, and how we do that is we have an advantage because we write as co-authors and so Charles can look at something that I've written and say, there's no guy on the planet that would ever say this the way you just said that dialogue. It's just not going to happen. And conversely, I will do exactly the same thing. And so I think that helps us, just a small little add on there.
Now, you guys you're not a couple and you don't live in the same household, so you're not living together and all that stuff. So what's your process as writing as co-authors like that? Does one person write something and then send it to the other and then the other person writes on top of it? Or do you guys each write separate characters and then put them together? Let's start with Rox.
So it's a good question. So we do write separate chapters initially. When we kind of scope out where we want the story to go and the threads that we want to include, we probably scope at a really high level, at 10, maybe 12 chapters of who's going to be in this chapter and what's the point of this particular chapter. And we actually, say, okay, I'm going to take chapters 1, 5, 7, 8, 9, and you can have the rest of them or however that breaks up. And we assign them and we do the first pass on the ones we signed up for. And then, as Charles indicated, we bat them back and forth, even after that point. And then they kind of come through a smoothing thing before they go to the editor to make sure it does sound like one voice. But no, we tend to write a chapter. If both of us decide the chapter's good, but it's in the wrong spot, it could move around in the book. Because it's all electronic, documents. Cut and paste works really well for us.
And Charles, what about you?
I like the ability to be able to, I'll say, do some pioneering work on some of the chapters. Here's an idea we try it out. And of course, that's you know, where you know that old gag about the difference between pioneers and farmers is that the pioneers are the ones with the arrows in their back. So if the chapter doesn't work, why not? And it becomes it should be there. It's like, well, why doesn't it fit? Let's explore that logic, that reasoning, before we say, okay, let's move it down, or maybe it was taking too long to develop, or it's dragging the story down, or we've introduced some characters like, gee, Charles, you know, we don't need, you know, 150 people in this book. You know, 8 will do. So let's kind of, you know, narrow it down. So a lot of that is the flying by the seat of your pants with what it looks like, but it's actually controlled chaos from our point of view.
Well, that's fun. Have you ever had an idea or started putting together a story and then partway into it, you know, whether it's a couple of months or whatever, however many chapters, and you just realize that this isn't working. I don't like this. This isn't happening. And if so, what do you do with it? And let's start with Charles.
We've had a couple like that. They'll go in the electronic drawer, so to speak, until such time. Okay, let's take a look at this. And where did we go off the rails? Where is the problem with this? And maybe it was it wasn't the character development. It's we get a character take a left turn on, we didn't notice it. So those are, you know, some of the things that will bring it back. It's not uncommon for us to go ahead and scope out a story. We just did one for that we're going to do for the next installment in the Magnolia Bluff series. Here's the outline. And I'll put it in there and say, okay, fine, we'll look at it next year. But it captures an idea that we had. We were going to a book show, and we're great about doing that. You know, for you drive 2 hours and you get 2 hours worth of talk time on a story thread. And we may not get to it for 6 months, but it does keep the inventory top of mind. But have we ever had something like, we're never going to do this one? I don't believe we've gotten that. We've had some that were, you know, we stubbed our toe on it. Yeah. Okay. No two ways about it. Did we retrieve it? Yeah. Yeah, we did.
And Rox, what's your thought?
I agree 100% with what he said. We have stubbed our toes. We have parked work for at least 6 months. And you know, usually that's because I'm stubborn and something didn't sit right with me, and maybe I can't articulate it right, and Charles is being very kind about it. But until we can align on the character, and sometimes it's just the time. Sometimes the elements that we're pulling into here is, you know, maybe it's partly because of some social unrest that's going on, that the subject matter we chose is just not going to fit right now. It's just, it needs to wait. Or we need to take a little bit different direction on this character or that character. I mean, I have one that we actually put into a short story that I have these grandiose dreams of bringing into a novel. But, you know, it's been sitting now for about 9 months, and we've got other projects going on. So it can sit for a while longer as long as I have it backed up.
So you have to be kind of conscious of what's going on in the world or around and think about whether or not you want to include it in your stories.
Sometimes that's really the case. It you know, when you have heroes and villains, they can't be typecast this year the same way as they were typecast, let's say, 10 years ago, because the dynamics have changed, people's opinions have changed, and tolerance, I think, has shifted a couple of times. And though we like to say we'd always like to write everything just the way we want it to be, we also like to have readers that are happy with our storytelling, get thrilled when they learn that the four right turns that are in the Enigma Killer are actually perfectly timed and very much surprising. But you know, you have people, and that's a very, you know, it's a part I think we just have to be mindful of.
Right, right. So now this is book 16 of 17. So you're writing, this is a series. Now, how do you keep a series like that fresh, and how do you keep it going with your main characters and the main theme and stuff without it growing tired? Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, but Magnolia Bluff is a very unique series, and we probably should have should have shared that with you a little bit. So a couple of years ago, we got involved with about 9 other authors, maybe 10, that decided we wanted to write Cozy Mystery Series. We wanted to have a chance to contribute to that series. And so in the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles, which is now in season 2, each author, and we're counted as one author in that routine, each author writes about something that happens in Magnolia Bluff. Now, Magnolia Bluff is this wonderful, quaint, idyllic town in the hill countries of Texas, where the hills are rolling, the wine is flowing, and, you know, you have small town activities, and everybody knows everybody's business. And in this particular series, the very best marketplace that we have, the people that are making the most money in this area, is the coroner and the gravediggers, because everybody's dying to get in here. So we actually have only written 2 of the books for the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles. So, Charles, I know you want to add into here because you're just, I can tell.
And so that's, so the branding and the Magnolia Bluff theme, even some of the characters, we swap them around. You know, we have the look and feel of all the other books from the cover side and the interior. But the characters are shared, you know, and the rule is don't whack somebody's prime character, because that's naughty. Some of the themes, some of the peculiarities, the character flaws, shall we say, or the personality disorders in some of the characters that we borrow or we lend to somebody else. The characters and the stories are from a certain point of view from that author, but a lot of shared attributes, you know, where the coffee shops are, the donut places, the bed and breakfast that we have in there. We all agree on certain things that we contribute to the series, and then other people leverage them, borrow them, and, you know, and what we do is we'll send some of the, here's a snippet of this character description, some of their attributes and, their attitudes, to another author that they're going to use in their book. And so it's, very much a federation of authors with a here's a single place that we can focus on, but with different characters, different story threads, and different story lines, so that they're each one is a standalone book. They each, you know, they don't have any dependencies as a, you know, you don't have to read them in order. You read them out of order. Unless, of course, somebody takes a wax a character of theirs before, you know, you get to them. So that's that may be a bit of a problem, but that's what's going on. So that's why, we're not necessarily tied to the Magnolia Bluff theme. And are we going to get stale? No, because we're not writing all the books. We're working with a lot of people who they write in a lot of different genres, and we all collaborate in this one.
Well, how difficult is it to write and keep track of a shared universe like this?
It's really hard, and we often have to have little exchanges between one another to say, okay, I know this character was mentioned in book number whatever. Where are they at right now? And that author will usually chime in and say something about what that character is doing, or they'll say, nope, you can't use that character because they died here and you forgot they died. So we kind of have a shared folder that we use, but we also have one person who just seems to be a mutant when it comes to keeping track of everything and all the characters, which has been really, really helpful. The other thing that's interesting about it, have you gentlemen been in a small town or been around a small town for any period of time?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, right? So we probably all have at some point in time. And you may talk to, you know, Joe Jones, who runs the hardware store, and have one impression of him, David. And yet Alan may talk to that same person and get a totally different impression. So that's one of the attributes that has also come into this series, because each author has a little bit point of view. It's like pointing to a neighbor and saying, oh, I think they're really nice. And the other person says, well, I think they're not. But that happens. That's what happens in real life. So it makes it really fun.
But the one, to your point, Dave, is it challenging? You get 12 overachieving authors together on a conference call to talk about what the series is doing and who's doing what and to whom and how many times. It takes 2 hours for all of these overachievers to get their say so in on where they're taking stuff. So, but it's focused in on a very comfortable pace, I guess is the best way I put it. We crank out one a month over the period of a year. So, and Rox indicated this is a book, this number's season two, and we're already scoping out season three, and we've got our lineup in position, and as I'd indicated earlier, we've already got a story outline in the back of our minds ready to be able to start working on that next story.
Well, let's get some names and gossip and some bad writers from people that come up with bad stories.
Oh, you know, we do have some writers that are very, very interesting, and they're all award-winning writers in their own right, which makes it really fun to listen to them. But we actually have one person who's a therapist, and so they bring that kind of quality into this murder mystery, and they're cozy mysteries, all of them to one degree or another, but they do have a little twist on the genre, like a little paranormal or a little thriller, like ours have a little thriller in them. But they're still considered a cozy mystery.
So cozy. So are you concerned about violence when you write it on a page or how you, display that sort of thing? Is that why you do cozies or is there some other reason?
No, it's just that particular genre has a really good readership, and if you can tap into the fan base, it's phenomenal. And a lot of the horrible violence that goes along with murder, as you point out, the descriptions and the icky part of it, it's behind the door. You know, it's just it's not in someone's face.
The crime isn't splashed all over the interior of the book. It's like, okay, who did it? What's the process of doing the detective and sleuthing work, and what's the net of it towards the end, rather than focus on how much blood and gore is going to be in it. So most of these folks are cozy mystery writers. So it was kind of a nice privilege for them to invite us in, and have them comment positively that they like our contribution. So. Most gratifying.
Yeah, and myself, I write true crime, and in a lot of the books, I don't have a lot of the descriptions. I don't get into detail of a lot of the different murders or things that happened. That's just the way I choose it. But I think it also allows a person's imagination, and I think that's important as well.
Could not agree more.
Agreed.
So now, in this book, so when you're putting it together, do you guys ever think about a theme or subtext or some sort of point that you want to get across to the readers or something by the end of the book, or is it purely entertainment?
In these books, in this series for us, I consider it purely entertainment. Charles might differ with me, but I think it's much more entertainment. In our thriller series that we also write, there's a point. We've got some hidden messages in there that we want to do without having a school classroom.
I'd say that was fair. I mean, they're written for entertainment. We just got finished with a blog tour where we pulled out a couple of segments and let people kind of try before they buy it. Some of the entertaining value of the book, the one in The Killer Enigma, the 911 call. I got so many people I love that sequence. That was so, to use an unusual word, very tasty and funny. So that's, I'd have to agree. Yeah, it's written for the entertainment value. How would you solve this particular crime? What's behind it? That's the entertainment value.
So let me guess, who writes the bad person, the evil person in the book, the one that's doing the wrong thing, so to speak? And I would bet it would be Rox.
Oh, wow. I honestly have to say we both do. It depends on the character. One of the one of the worst characters that we've created, and it's not in this particular series, but one of the worst one. We had more comments about how much people disliked this character. This character is so, it's a loathsome. I can't even say the word. It's just a yucky character. It's a bad character. It's evil. Why do you keep having her in here? She's just awful, awful, awful. And then she did something that was, I don't know, a bit redeeming. And you're like, oh, no, we just love this character. All those trials she went through. But that wasn't my character. That was his character.
I'm kind of partial to the evil Femme Fatales. And whenever I get a chance, if we have a female podcaster or interviewer, after we talk with them long enough, I'll usually ask them for a resume for the next evil character they've got, and I do insist on references. So, gentlemen, we have a couple of evil males coming up, and you look like you could have some potential. So I'd like to have resumes on you, and don't forget the written confirmations from people to say, yeah, this is an evil guy.
The problem is they're all dead, so, you know, that might not come easy. The references, they can't write when they're dead in general. But you can
and everything's been expunged.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all buried. It's all in. It's down under.
Yeah. And that's a good word, Barry. You know, but how do you get into the mindset of the person and follow through when they're doing bad things, if they're killing people or they're doing something that's really awful, for instance, and even in your thriller books, like when you're doing that, how do you kind of get into that character?
Well, we've, not to put too fine a point on it, we've been at several companies, worked in the technical environment for more decades than I'd like to be able to admit. And the people that we meet, we get, you get snippets of their dark side. A lot of it is just like, wow, I need to keep that piece of information available because I'm going to be able to use this, when I build the next bad guy. So a lot of it is, field research, if you will.
And I, from my side, I'm an avid reader. I mean, I read lots of stuff, some good, some I wish I'd never read. And so those experiences, along with just meeting people, comes into characters at different times. And so most of the evil characters are composites. And it does take time to show their evil character attributes sometimes.
How about some names?
You want the real names or you want the fictitious?
Yeah, give us the real names and then we'll call them and get them on.
Well, the ones that I know are still incarcerated, gentlemen.
Well, there you go. They can take a phone call. I visit criminals all the time, so.
Yeah, in your stories, you do a lot of research.
Yeah, it kind of goes crazy sometimes, and it can take a while because you can't always get into a prison right away. You have to go through a certain process depending on where you're going, and then they have rules, and then even if you get approved, you have to speak to the killer's liaison or person that represents them and arrange the time. And yeah, it's quite a process to go through sometimes. That's why I always have a couple going at the same time, personally.
Well, that's like an awful lot of work. I think I'll just make up the stuff as I go. Yeah, that's easier.
Yeah, and there's certainly plenty out there to pick from, ideas, you know.
Agreed.
Endless drive-through of killing. Here we go. So now the book, The Killer Enigma, tell us the basic premise of this book so people kind of get an idea of what they're getting when they pick up the book.
So it's awesome. So The Killer Enigma, we actually bring back our two heroes to Magnolia Bluff. The two heroes are JJ, who's a technology geek, and Joe, his wife now, who happens to be a actually stunning model for a Brazilian dress fashion manufacturer. But she's being just badgered by the paparazzi. Anytime she's in Brazil, anytime she travels, they have to have a whole, you know, squadron of bodyguards to make sure that she's not bothered. And he tries to take her out for a romantic dinner to kind of lead up to their first year's anniversary. And they are swarmed at dinner by the paparazzi. And he thought everything was perfect. He thought it was going to be a quiet, you know, little wonderful thing. And it was just a debacle. And so she wants to go back to Magnolia Bluff because nobody in the small town bothered her. Nobody in the small town made her feel like she was anything but a human being who just wants to have a good time and be with the love of her life. And so they decide to go back there. And, you know, if you look at the cover of the book, they decide to go back there and they both really feel like there's a kindredship with Magnolia Bluff. And so, you know, they decide they're going to maybe invest in some property in the town and come back there on vacations or, you know, holidays and things like that because they still like the people. They like what's going on. And they pick a property that, wow, who'd have thought?
Has a history. And the story continues to unfold until the history is exposed. They're trying to build that that dream vacation. And all it turns into is a nightmare. And it's one ghastly finding after another. And, of course, the police come in and say, J.J., what is it about you? I mean, every time you come to town, you do is discover trouble. What is it like in your day job? So it's we have those moments with the with them trying to navigate a new place to be able to call home, where they're hidden from the people that are hounding them, and they get to hang out with people who don't know where they're from or how famous they are. And of course he can't be famous because his job is in the technical thriller world of undercover work and ferreting out the bad guys, so he can't be a known figure. So that's why they want to be able to do this.
And Magnolia Bluff, the location, the setting, it's obviously very important. So where do you draw that from? Like, where is it based on a certain town or a combination? And maybe give us the setting basics.
So, Alan, have you ever been to Texas?
Just Dallas.
Okay, so you've been to the big city.
Yeah.
In Texas, but Texas is made up primarily of a lot of very small towns. I mean, there's actually a town in Texas that's called Cut and Shoot, just to give you an example. Okay? It has two stop signs. But the Texas Hill Country is outside of Austin, which is the capital of Texas, and it truly is nestled in some rolling hills. Now, I know that you're going to find this amusing, but, you know, the general level of Dallas is 100 feet above sea level. So hills might be a little different. It's a perspective kind of thing that you have to think about. But the hill country is gaining in popularity for wine and everything else. But there are small towns. You can drive windy roads for, you know, 40 miles between towns and pop into this little town. They have they might have a courthouse. They might have a post office, which makes them big time. And they might have a stoplight or two, which is another big signal of, you know, a big town. But they're quiet, but they're also, they were founded by people. They know everybody. People don't move from the small towns in Texas very often. They kind of stick around there for generations. So it's pulled from the hill country because it's a beautiful place to go. It kind of mirrors a couple of different small towns that are in that area because of their location near a reservoir. And you may not know it, listeners may not know it either, but there's only one true lake in the state of Texas. Everything else has been created and is a reservoir of sorts. So this happens to be next to a reservoir. So it's a very pretty kind of area. And when you're in a small town, you don't think there's anything else going on outside of your small town. You kind of like everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, this is an interesting kind of idea. So you have to really kind of make sure your characters fit that as well, because that's got to be a certain type of personality that is there in that kind of town, or stays in that kind of town, or goes to it.
You know, Charles, I think you'd agree with me that we have a variety of personalities. See, there are some that are, you know, characters that are characters, and then characters that are very mousy, and they all have a role, and they're all gossips. Gossip is a big deal in Texas.
It's a big industry in most small towns. Yes, that's right.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, guys. So now, where do people find you? Do you guys do social media? Do you have a website? Do you have a location that you like readers or fans to go to find out what's coming out next and what you're doing?
Our mailing list is very important for finding out what we're doing. Our website is enigmabookseries.com. And you'll find all of the links to the e-books, to the paperbacks, and even to the Audibles. We're big believers in all media for all kinds of different reader tastes, and so it's the Audibles were something that we added in, and we have those links out there as well. If you order the hard copy from us, or you can order from Amazon, or you can get them from your favorite bookstore, Barnes & Noble. I mean, any of those places, we're in the distribution channels to be able to get handled through the store of your choice.
And then we also have Twitter, we have Goodreads, we have BookBub, and all of those links are available from that website. Either Enigma Series or the Enigma Series will track on most of it as well. Most of those social media channels.
Are you running on TikTok yet?
You know, we did TikTok and took it down.
Oh, you didn't like TikTok, eh? Too much.
TikTok just wasn't, no.
Yeah, no, I know. Gives me a headache sometimes too, but now I'm stuck with it, so here we go. Well, we appreciate you being on the show. Your latest book, The Killer Enigma, and it's a Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicle, book 16. So the authors are our guests, Charles Brakefield and Rox Berkey. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Al. Much appreciated. And Dave, thanks for the spirited discussion, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, all shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, all shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.